Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Science Faction, the only show where a scientist, a comedian, and a comedian scientist come together to discuss science comedically.
Hello, and welcome to Science Faction 540, Science Faction Dogs and Jeans.
Like, are we talking about how sexy dogs look in the right pair of jeans? I'm not talking a pair of JNCOs. No species can pull off a JNCO.
No. So the real shame is when every once in a while there's a dog that you just know has got it going on, but they're wearing mom jeans, and that just ruins it for you.
Listen, this German Shepherd has potential. Has potential. But these Brett Favre Wranglers we got going on, are those New Balances? Holy shit.
Ladies, stop letting advertising execs and gay men lie to you. Nobody looks good in high-waisted jeans. It's not a thing. You look like a fucking idiot. Stop using those.
You know what? Maybe you get to a point where, like, I'm a mom. I don't care. Or maybe I'm too fuckable. If I go out dressed like I give a damn, people are just throwing D at me all day.
And speaking of throwing D at you all day, I, of course, am your host, comedian archaeologist Robert Timothy. With me, as always, is my comedian, Mr. Damien Mercado. Damien, how are you doing this afternoon?
I am doing great. By the way, I feel like if I met some genie and I didn't use your genie lawyer as you have... Yes. Do you want to take some time and explain the premise of a genie lawyer to
our
fans?
Real quick, is the first wish anybody should make if they get three wishes is for a genie lawyer, because genies are constantly trying to screw you out. Like, it's like buying a car from an Armenian guy. Like, you better be on the ball, because that genie's going to try and fuck you over on this deal. And so, like, your first wish should be for a genie lawyer with your best interests at heart who will do the best job possible to get you the wishes you want. Now, granted, now you're down from three wishes to two wishes, but those two wishes are going to count. It's not like one of those things where you say, like, I want to live forever, I'm going to get $1 million, and he turns you into, like, a tortured POW who gets tortured for the rest of his life, or, like, $1 million you're never going to get. Like, that genie lawyer, he's looking out for you.
Yeah, I mean, you could have three wishes where you're sweating, three gambles, three massive gambles with your health, safety, and welfare, or just pay some wish interest and just have two wishes that you feel safe with.
Absolutely. This is the difference between wish wealthy and wish poor, is whether or not you're smart enough to get the genie attorney.
So when you get to win the lotto, take the lump sum.
I'm sorry, David, what were you going on about the genie attorney for?
Oh, yes. I feel like if I were to meet a genie and I didn't have a genie attorney and I were to wish that I wish I was so hot that people were throwing D at me all day. Mm-hmm. I feel like the genie thought, like, fine, he thinks it's fine to have men throwing themselves at you all day. Well, let's see what it's like for all eternity. And I end up just living the happiest life for all of eternity.
You're essentially the quintessential Homer Simpson in the donut hell where they can't overfeed him enough.
Sure wish there was a penis inside of me right now. Oh, thank God I made a wish.
Dear. No Patreon shout-outs this week, because I do want to announce that foreign Patreons, I did get your shit out. We figured out what was going on.
Foreign Patreon sounds derogatory. Can we use different terminology? Those foreign Patreons.
Expat Patreons? Yeah. We got your stuff out. It is out in the mail. Give it a week or two. I don't know how your weird postal system works over there in New Zealand or so. I don't know if it gets delivered by a fucking emu, but, like, regardless, give it however long it's supposed to get, and then send me a message if you didn't get it, and I'll make sure you get something out. But everybody is out. It hasn't gotten returned within the time it would have been. It went out early last week, so it should be gone and off to your spot.
Let me tell you about them foreign Patreons coming in here taking all of our jobs. Once we get a wall keeping people like Superfan Dwayne and all the people from New Zealand and Canada from coming in and stealing all of our good, hardworking American Patreon jobs, that's why I'm voting for Trump again.
To be fair, we do kind of have a wall against people from New Zealand, and it's called the Pacific Ocean, and it's so much more effective than a wall.
They also have walls in that I think a lot of them are like, we're too good to go over there. Are you kidding? That's the country where COVID is ravaging. Yeah.
They are literally in a bubble outside of this outbreak. They have no reason to come and go into pandemic crazy town for no apparent reason.
I don't know what the population of New Zealand is, but I'm going to go ahead and guess that we've lost more people due to COVID than they have people on their island.
Yeah, and speaking of crazy apocalypses, if you guys hear a bunch of noise in the back, I don't know how to explain this to people who are outside of where we're living right now, except for the fact that San Diego is apparently being blown off the map, literally by like 60-mile-an-hour winds. It is one of the weirdest things. I've been to a lot of windy places. I've worked out in the desert in one of the windiest places on Earth, or at least one of the windiest ones here in the United States.
Baghdad?
I've seen a lot of wind, And it's windy as shit here. Like, there are trees falling over. It is gusting at well over 50 miles an hour. It's consistent at like 40. It's pretty crazy right now. So you may hear some background noise on our ends.
I kept expecting us not to be able to record tonight because the power would come off or this house would be lifted by a tornado.
Yes. Yeah. Well, thankfully, where you and I both live, the lines have been undergrounded, but I'm sure there's quite a few places. I bet you the entire East County right now up in the mountains is all out of power because they shut that off now when it gets a certain wind speed. So yeah, I bet that is no fun times over there. But yeah, so you may hear a little bit of stuff in the background. I'm sorry, I can't control the wind yet. Thanks, Obama. But eventually we will. Until then, sorry for any background noise you may hear.
You may hear Patreon quietly fluffing in the background. Hey, less talk, more fluff, robot.
Speaking of less talk, let's move right on to science articles.
From molecules to particles, this is Science Articles.
Okay, article number one, an incredibly interesting article. Has the origins of the dog been discovered?
Yes, they have. Oddly enough, it was next to an ancient tub of Jiffy peanut butter. These were wolves that made a dark compromise, a dark pact, long ago.
It was the original version of an indecent proposal.
Well, I'll give your wolf wife one can of Jiffy peanut butter if she'll just lick it off my nuts.
Demi Moore took that offer.
That's a bold thing to say to a wolf. They're very fierce creatures.
Yes.
There's a lot of trust you're putting in that wolf.
Oh, very, very, very interesting article. And this is something we have talked about on the show a bunch of times. We've talked about different genesis of specific dog genes, some interesting ancient dog DNA studies. We've been around so long that we've actually been around for most of the ancient dog DNA studies that have been published. We've covered every single one, at least all the ones that I know of. We found out that some studies seem to show that dogs have two different possible domestication points, one in East Asia, one in West Asia. We found that dogs differentiated way earlier than we thought, with one that we reported on less than a year ago about a bunch of, you know, 9,000-year-old dog DNA that was recovered out of Central Asia and like the Siberia region, and how that told us some dogs had already split off. We've talked about all of this stuff between wolves and dogs. Basically, though, if you guys haven't heard it before, the basic idea of where we think dogs came from is a gray wolf that was around people, essentially following them, following their kills, and slowly but surely, the wolves that were less afraid of humans would get to the food quicker. So if a human encampment leaves, and they leave a bunch of food behind, the wolves would come and eat it all. But wolves in general are very scared of humans, so they stay far away. Now imagine, just because of some genetic predispositions, some are born that are less scared of humans. The humans leave, they're the first ones to get to that food. That gives them reproductive success. They breed faster. All of a sudden, we basically accidentally domesticate dogs to be our companions. And we know this happened before any other animal, predates all the rest by quite a bit, somewhere in the range of 20 to 30 some odd thousand years ago, maybe even older. And that gives us kind of an idea that this has been a very ancient relationship with people. They came from the gray wolves, and then they've spread all around the world. We have wild dogs in Africa. There are very ancient lineage of dogs that exist in New Guinea that we think with some of those people there, the New Guinea singing dog, dogs that came out of, you know, China and Europe, dogs that made it into the Americas that, as we've discussed on the show before, essentially all but went extinct. They still have their genes remaining in the Chihuahua, the Peruvian hairless, and the Carolina singing dog.
Mr. Worldwide?
And Pitbull, yes. He is a dog of the Americas.
You have to differentiate Mr. Worldwide because there is a species that bears his unique genus name.
That's right. But there was a huge range of dogs that existed all over North and South America that essentially went extinct at contact. They got outcompeted or something, maybe disease from old world dogs. So dogs have this very interesting past. But for a long time, we've still been trying to narrow down when and where they actually became domesticated from wolves. Like I said, we had some instances where it looked like there was some from maybe some from East Asia, maybe some from West Asia. It doesn't help, by the way, that since they bred in, it's not like dogs all of a sudden evolved from gray wolves and then you know, led to all the dogs we know now with no admixtures. Essentially, every time they go someplace, they breed with native gray wolf populations in those places. They get some genes from gray wolves get some genes from our dogs, back and forth. And like we've talked about this before, like the gene for black wolves didn't exist in North American wolves until we brought it over with some dogs, and that's how they got it. And so there is this interchange, and that kind of muddies the water where it makes it harder and harder to tell where exactly they came from.
Now, in San Diego, we know coyotes will eat your dog, right?
Yes.
Do wolves just, when they see a dog, they fuck it more often than they try to eat it? Or?
I mean, both can happen. Yeah, sometimes with the same dog.
Hopefully it happens in, there's an order that it's less messy and disgusting to walk in on. That wolf's fucking a corpse.
I mean, I kind of feel better for the dog that way. But yeah, they can breed. Right now, as far as we know, all of those extant canines can still breed. So dogs can breed with wolves. Wolves can breed with coyotes. We believe dogs can breed with coyotes as well. When wolves and coyotes breed, they create something called a coy wolf, which is...
It's a wolf that's it's snarky.
It knows it's hot, but it totally acts like it.
Yeah, it takes its prey down by insulting what it's wearing, but like really like passively, like, oh, that's your fur? No, it's cool. You know, I like that you're so brave that you just don't need to condition.
So this new paper that just got released this week indicates that dogs were domesticated in Siberia sometime around 23,000 years ago. Now, without getting too in-depth, there might be a few outliers in this. It looks like we have a few domesticated-esque dog remains that seem older than this, but it looks like this might be the lineage that led to modern dogs. So how did they figure this out? It was an interesting kind of thought process. Somebody thought, when we move around, we bring dogs with us. If you could try and match dog genetics through time and then see if they matched human genetics through time, you could kind of go back to an original point. And so they did this looking at North America. North America is an easy example because, like I said, there's not a lot of existing dog lineages around, or the dog lineages that were there are not really existing anymore, except for, like I said, some contributions to Chihuahua, Peruvian hairless, and Carolina Singing Dog. But other than that, not really around. And so they traced ancient dog DNA along with ancient people. And they found that dogs came in, you know, 10 to 15,000 years ago into the New World. And they were all part of a specific genetic lineage called A2B. And A2B spread out into like four or five distinct lineages once it made it into the Americas that coincided with distinct lineages of human beings. So these were bringing their dogs around with them. They traced that thing back to before then, to 15 to 20 some odd thousand years, as these groups of human beings that were around in Siberia at the time were essentially around gray wolves that we think were the first domestication event that led to all of modern day dogs. There was a couple of interesting reasons why we think it happened here. One is this one spot in Siberia was an area the ancient Siberians lived in that was fairly temperate for the region, but if you went too far east or west, it got, like, Siberia fucked up.
It is warm, negative 30 degrees in this part of Siberia.
Yeah, and so they were kind of hemmed in there, and so they stayed with kind of the same group of wolves for a long time. They think that they got domesticated there, and then a group of them went with the ancient Siberians when the ancient Siberians basically went and mated with other groups that then became the Native Americans and took their dogs with them on one end, and the other end went west towards Europe and brought dogs with them that became the European dogs, and then some group eventually went down south and became the dogs that we know of, the East Asian dogs. And so far, the genes all seem to line up. Now, there's a lot of work that needs to go into confirm something like this because of all the different dog lineages, because of the interbreeding that has gone on since then, because of the admixtures from wolves and stuff like that. There's a lot of work that needs to go in to confirm this, but right now, these are some really tantalizing clues that seem to coincide with human and dog dispersal throughout the world that would indicate that sometime around, you know, 23 some odd thousand years ago in Siberia, the dog was domesticated and then led to this thing that basically took over human populations around the world. Almost everybody has dogs. You know, the Australians didn't have them for a long time, but the dingo got there like 5 or 10,000 years ago. So, you know, even these...
Yeah, but they got there to eat babies.
Even these far reaches ended up being changed by the dog, which was this amazing technology. I mean, dogs are really interesting when you think about it. You keep a dog around, not only can it help you hunt, it alerts you when somebody is sneaking up on you. So you're all of a sudden, everybody can sleep at night. You don't have to have one person watching because that dog's going to get up and let you know. It takes down animals. It scares away animals. It smells way better than you, hears way better than you. It's a really
gets peanut butter out of your house.
It gets it out of your house.
I don't know where it went, Mom. I don't know why Buster's full and doesn't want dinner.
Very, very interesting. I am looking to see some follow-up studies. As soon as I see anything published on this, I'm going to tell you because I think this is an incredibly interesting question and one that we've been trying to answer for literally probably about 200 years in depth, and we might have literally just answered this week.
The universe is not without a sense of humor, Mr. Timothy.
Huh.
How crazy is it that the happiest species on the planet, a species that just inspires joy sometimes just by looking at them, came from Siberia, of all places, the most depressing fucking place on the earth.
I mean, maybe that's the way it works. Maybe that's, you know, it's like the savant that comes from the ghetto, so to speak, like that drives them to be even better than they naturally would be. Maybe that's what makes dogs so happy is they all dogs come from such a harsh place and they have some kind of genetic memory of how horrible it was that they're like, come on, guys, let's live for now.
Because it was the only species to have actually come up from Siberia, so it had natural defenses against depression. And so it's just, it's the only animal that can't be depressed.
Yeah, actually, if you go to Siberia, those dogs are just kind of like sullen and whatever. That's just a normal dog state. That's where they're normal being. That's why every other dog, like when you come home, they're super psyched because they're like, oh my God, I'm so happy to be alive and that you're not Russian.
Yay, I am not going to be beaten by man who reeks of vodka. I'm going to be beaten by man who reeks of beer.
All right, on to article number two. Childhood self-control might determine how fast you age.
So fat kids or kids with heavy drug addiction, are you saying they're not going to live as long as the thin kids or the kids with who do little to no drugs or just lame drugs?
It's a good point, Damien. You might be getting into some causational, correlational issues here with your fat drug addict kids. Apparently, every kid to you is either healthy or Chris Farley. Like, that's the only two options.
You get to eat dinner when you finish your drugs.
This is a very interesting article out of Damien's favorite journal, PNAS.
Science, Nature? Oh, I see, PNAS.
It indicates a strong correlation between self-control and slower aging. We'll define what that means in middle age. So they wanted to look at this for a few reasons. Now, we've talked a lot about these different kind of tests that we do on kids to test the idea of self-control. There's a very famous one called the Oreo test, where researchers would offer kid a treat. Sometimes it was an Oreo, sometimes it was a marshmallow. Also, it's called the marshmallow test. You probably have heard it that way. Or some M&Ms or something. And they'd say, you can have this now, or you can wait for it, and in 10 minutes, I'll come back here, and if you haven't eaten it, you get two of them. And that test, I think actually it's more often called the marshmallow test than the Oreo test. That marshmallow test is actually a really good indicator of how successful those kids will be later on. Like the ability to not eat that Oreo or that marshmallow in the first 5 minutes when you're 6 years old is very telling about whether or not you are going to be middle management or like a gas station worker when you are 35.
Bobby, it sounds like on its face it's good, but there's so many different variables, different controls that I hope they did. Like, for example, if I'm a kid, as an adult, I don't think this has changed. If you sat me down and you said, Damien, don't touch this Reese's for 5 minutes, and if you do, you get a second Reese's. The Reese's, it's done. It never stood a chance. It's going to be gone. Okay. But if you replace it with yellow Starbursts,
gotcha.
I will set records for how long that thing goes uneaten. People will think, like, this guy's going to be president. He didn't touch the candy ever.
We saw that kids had different tactics for doing it too. Like some kids who were very drawn would do things like they would like cover their eyes or look away from the candy, and it made it easier for them to like hold off. I like to think that I would get the best of both worlds, which is I would look around, very slyly open up the Reese's, take the Reese's out, but then put the wrapper reinflated as if it was still there, eat the candy. When the guy walks in, hey, buddy, where's my second Reese's? And he'd be like, actually, we have you on tape. We saw that you took it out. And then I'd hit him and take his whole fucking bag of Reese's.
I was like, yeah, what if there was like a, basically while this is going on, you're actually doing an Ocean's 11 thing where you're jacking the candy room.
You could have literally literally spent like $3 down at the dollar store to buy this bag. These walkie-talkies alone were more than that.
This kid's a heist prodigy. He's like fucking 7? This is amazing.
But this was an interesting study looking at that same kind of thing, your self-control at an early age, and how it affects the speed at which you age when you are in middle age. Now, one really interesting thing that I liked about how they did this study is this is not one of those studies where they go, hey, look, we looked at kids who had impulse control, we measured that, and then later we looked at adults who had these issues and we measured that, blah, blah, blah. They actually followed the same kids in this one. This is one of those studies, those longitudinal studies that go on forever. So they basically followed these kids like since shortly after birth into their now 50s. And this large cohort of people, so they can kind of look back and see how things progressed. And they found some pretty goddamn interesting stuff. So first, they wanted to, when we talk about like aging in midlife, people age at different rates. Paul Rudd, great example. People age at different rates.
That's a pact with the devil. That's nothing. Paul Rudd, I can either choose to believe that A, this man is 70 years old, or he's a god.
So people age at different rates, and we can measure it in different ways. So in this case, they wanted to look at structural brain imaging scans to see whether or not the brain is reflective of an older or younger person, observer ratings, self-reports, informant reports, and administrative records. And when they did the kids testing, now again, they did these kids testing like 40 years ago during this study, and they assessed them at different times because kids age and change. So they looked at them at 3 years old, 5 years old, 7 years old, 9 years old, and 11 years old, which gave them a pretty good kind of average of whether or not this is the kid who's just going to snag the marshmallow the second you leave the room, or if this is somebody who's going to sit and wait a while.
Was the kid Italian? Because that was another big like factor. Was he like, oh, I want to touch the Reese's Avena buttercup?
Like, even the Italian kids who did have good self-control, the Reese's was gone afterwards because they were so busy talking about the Reese's, they had knocked it off the table.
I talk really close to the Reese's and it fall down.
They went and looked back again at the respondents from the ages of 26 to 45, and they measured the pace of the physiological decline across multiple organ systems and all that stuff we talked about, brain scans, everything. That at 45, they also did structural MRI tests to derive estimates of how old that brain is. So you have you're 45, but you have the brain of a 30-year-old, or you have the brain of a 60-year-old, and to see how much white matter you have, et cetera, et cetera. And when they did all of that, it was really interesting because what they basically found was, A, there is a strong correlation between the ability to wait, to hold off that self-control aspect, and a lower physiological age vis-a-vis your chronological age when you get older. Meaning, if you are the person who is able to not eat that marshmallow, then you are much more likely to have a brain that looks 30 when you are 45. And if you are somebody who can't stand to not eat that marshmallow for 2 seconds, you are much more likely to have a brain that looks, you know, like 50 or 60 when you are 40. Very interesting. Now, there's a few caveats to this that I also found super interesting. The study didn't even focus on them. There were just little things I read in between the lines that were really, really interesting. One of them is that is not necessarily a static trait. So there are some people who, you put them down at 3 years old, they're not going to eat that marshmallow. They're not going to do it at 5, 7, 9, 11, their entire life. Like, that is just part of their personality. There are some, you put them down and you can't put the marshmallow on the table. It is already eaten. 3, 7, 5, 11, doesn't matter. That is just part of their personality. But most people are somewhere in between. They can kind of be manipulated or pushed one way or another. If you give them a bunch of lessons before the experiment about the importance of self-control, you can nudge them to be somebody who waits for the second marshmallow.
You can eat that marshmallow fatty? Really? Okay. I guess your parents just have an infinite pants budget. I guess that's what you're telling me.
What they found that was interesting is that those people who changed either in childhood, meaning like, you know, they changed between 3 and 11, or a little bit later when they changed in adolescence to adulthood, they showed the same benefits as kids who had, you know, passed the marshmallow test at 3, 5, 7, 9, 11 years old, meaning that you can still change that aspect of your personality, the eat the marshmallow or don't eat the marshmallow right away, and get the positive benefits. Now, as Damien brought up when we first started talking about this, who knows if this is causational or correlational? Is the same brain that has the ability to hold off on stuff more likely to make wise choices and decisions, and therefore that person is healthier? Or is it something where quite literally the act, the mental control that you are exhibiting by not eating that marshmallow is actually what keeps you young as you grow up? Who knows?
Is it possible that, you know, somebody was thinking like, I want to eat healthy. And so I know I need to eat the fewest marshmallows possible, but I don't have the willpower to just right. not eat it if it's in front of me. But if I just eat this marshmallow in front of me, I make that decision.
Oh, I see. That's interesting. This is the dieter's move.
Listen, I know me. Mm-hmm. I know how I work.
Yes. Oh, I like
this. This is how I beat the computer.
This is fantastic. This is like, I've heard all these rumors of people who have like cocaine addiction. And one of the things they'll do is like, they'll buy a bag, but then they don't want to use the whole bag. So then they'll seal up part of the bag and then freeze it in a big block of ice so that they have to like unfreeze it to get to the cocaine. I feel like that just leads to you with an ice chisel outside on the deck at 2 a.m.
The best way to do it, and this is something we know a guy who has done this, is to take that same amount of cocaine that you would have over a hour period, you put it into a nasal spray bottle, and you fill that with water, and you just microdose cocaine, which I have to imagine has positive health effects.
First of all, I know who you're talking about, and there is nothing micro about the dose that gentleman takes.
Blownase could be a $1 billion product.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, so it is interesting, but it's something to think about, because if this does have long-term mental health effects and other effects on your life, by the way, which it does, including, you know, your position in life, your happiness and your relationships, et cetera, and we know it's a changeable thing. Your ability to have this type of willpower is something you can build on. It's not like your 40 time where you're like, yeah, I can work on it a little bit, but I'm either gifted to be a fast person or I'm not, and there's not that much I can do about it. This is something that you can choose to change in yourself. You can really build a sense of willpower. You can build a sense of restraint in you. And it seems like it has much, much bigger, broader effects on your life if you do that.
You know, we could help people build willpower with a shock collar.
True.
Like, it's like training wheels. Like, hey, you know, like, hey, I understand right now you can't say no just yet, but we got this shock collar training wheels. I will help you say no. Eventually, you'll just piss yourself when the stimulus happens, and that will be how you say no.
And I believe, to paraphrase a quote from like Mexican drug cartels as they're offering bribes to police officers, take the shock or take the peanut butter.
I'll take the peanut butter. I was going to offer. I was going to offer. You don't even have to threaten. I was just.
It's not what you think.
I didn't put this dog costume on for nothing. Give me the goddamn peanut butter.
All right. Thank you, audience, for joining us for Science Faction 540, where you learned all about the origin of dogs and how the marshmallow test might help us know what your brain will look like in middle age. Thank you so much for joining us, and come on back next week for Science Faction 541.
Bobby, what did the study say about dogs who could resist eating the peanut butter for 5 minutes? Because I call those dogs that never get adopted.
You've been listening to Science Faction. Wait, that's not right.